and welcome to the Stretch Podcast. My name is Lebukule, your host. My guests and I will be having conversations on matters of self-development, emotional well-being, spiritual growth, and overall transformation. These are guests whose work, expertise, knowledge, and wisdom has inspired and moved me tremendously, and I hope that they inspire and move you too. Here is another episode of the Stretch Podcast. Hey, just before the episode, this is a quick reminder to say if you're hearing this, it means you are not yet a subscriber of the Stretch Podcast. We don't run adverts on the Stretch Podcast. Our focus is on giving great conversations with equally great guests. So our income for the podcast is directly from you, the listener, you, the subscriber. We would love for you to join the subscriber base if you love and value what we do here. In the meantime, you will get a partial episode. We trust that you will love it enough to subscribe. Hey, hey, dumelang, my friends. It is I, Lebukule, your host, with another episode of the Stretch Podcast. And today, I am in conversation with Reverend Diane Johnson. And we cover so many things. I know the topic on the poster is finding balance in an unbalanced world. But I'm going to tell you now, it takes us a while to get there. It takes us a while to actually get to the topic of the day, which seems to be the theme this year. I don't know if you guys have noticed, this year, almost all the conversations I've had with my guests almost betrays a strong word, does not talk directly to the topic. It actually goes beyond. It goes slightly broader than what the title or the topic says, which tells me two things. Either I have to find a new way of titling my episodes, or I don't know. I just need to be slightly smarter in titling, because the whole naming and titling is sitting squarely on my shoulders. It's my job to just title and label the topic. But we do get to it. We do talk about finding balance in an unbalanced world in a very deep philosophical, socio-spiritual, roundabout, feminine type of conversation. You know, and I'm going to read Reverend Dr. Diane Johnson. I'm going to read her bio just now. It's quite long. It is there on the show notes. I'm going to read parts of it. But firstly, as usual, I'm going to tell you how I know her, and then I'm going to read the bio, and I'm going to tell you briefly what we covered in the conversation. Okay. So this beautiful woman, I bumped into her in Chicago at the Parliament of World Religions. We actually met in a queue, or to put it in an American way, we met in a line. You know, Americans don't say we're standing in a queue. They say they're standing in a line. We were standing in a line for food. We were starving. It was day one of Parliament of World Religions. And there was this woman who was so friendly. Okay, you see, I consider myself very, very friendly, and I am. But I think she is friendlier. Those who know me and know how friendly I am, now imagine someone who is friendlier. That's how we immediately hit it off. It was me, her, and Reverend Stephanie Clark. You remember Reverend Stephanie Clark was also on the podcast. And we started chatting up, and I mean, it went further. We sat together at the food area. We ate, we spoke and spoke and spoke. And I remember Reverend Diane asking me, so what are you doing? You know, you are here. Yes, I understand. I think it was a full five days of attending the parliament. What else are you doing? And I'm like, no, we come to the parliament, then go to the Airbnb, then come to the parliament, then go to the Airbnb. And it's like, no, one of the days I'm going to take you out. You need to go out. You need to see Chicago by night. And indeed, on a Thursday, I remember it was a Thursday, because she wasn't going to come through the next day. She was leaving because she's not from Chicago. She came for the parliament as well. And we went out in the night, you know, we went to Kingston Mines, Chicago, one of the, you know, those rhythm and blues, live jazz music that you see in the movies. I mean, you guys, you did listen to my episodes about Parliament of World Religions and my trip to Chicago, right? And I kept saying to you that everything you see in the movies about America is true. Even, you know, this jazz, live music, disco place is very similar to what you see in the movies, where people are just hanging out, listening to live jazz, live music, ordering burgers and cocktails and beer. I mean, you know, and we were there, just me and her, and she was just showing me the town. So I was really, really happy and impressed, and we got talking, and she's a hardcore businesswoman who gave me pointers about what to do with my work, with the podcast, with my coaching. So some more mentoring from her is going to come, especially after this episode. We're going to talk some more and we'll see where our conversations take us. But that's how I met her, and it was just a pleasure. And I remember promising each other that please come to my podcast. And it took us, yeah, nearly a year. It took us so many months to eventually get to have a conversation, which is the first thing we talk about when we greet each other, that, oh my God, it took us so long. And I'm going to read her bio now, and I'm going to then share with you what the conversation covered. Okay, now her bio. It is a little long, so I'm just going to read the first part and a little bit at the bottom. Everything is there, though. You can get all her details. I've also attached her social media handles and the website to her company, Mapeu. Okay, so Dr. Reverend Diane Johnson is CEO and founder of Mapeu Consulting, a national organizational and leadership transformation firm committed to aligning mission, vision, and values for social enterprise, philanthropic institutions, social sector, purpose-driven businesses, B Corps, tech companies, and market leaders. She is deeply committed to creating dynamic, sustainable, and equitable models of market and community benefits. I also want to just go to the last paragraph and say, she has been fortunate enough to work in South Africa, Mexico, Zambia, and Zimbabwe. She received her doctorate in interdisciplinary studies, sociology, organizational behavior, management, and nonprofit studies. I mean, that is such a beautiful multi-interdisciplinary studies. This is what I want to do. This is what I want to do. I want to do social anthropology, psychology, and philosophy as one sub. Can I do that? And then I want to move down to the other side of who she is that has sort of linked to business, but not really. And this is, Dr. Johnson also received her master's in divinity from the Pacific School of Religion at the Graduate Theological Union in Berkeley, California, and is an ordained minister in the Progressive Christian denomination of the United Church of Christ. Her faith-based work focuses on the intersection of spirituality, social change, and equity, including working with numerous interfaith initiatives. She now lives in Massachusetts with her adorable Aussie Basset Hound and Corgi Mix Jasper. Those are dogs, who loves chasing the cat Sweet Pea. Oh no, man, I love that last part. And this is why, that last part is mainly why Reverend Diane was at the Parliament of World Religion. Now, in the conversation, we try to talk about finding balance in an unbalanced world, but then the conversation takes its own turn. We talk about all sorts of things, from global politics, the current wars that are happening in the world, in the Gaza, in the Congo. We talk about the history of South Africa. We talk about American politics. And then we get to balance in an unbalanced world. And then we talk about organizations, leadership, finding your own power in your own self as an individual, finding balance in the world, finding your calling, and all that. And that is the beauty of talking to broad people, broad-minded people like Reverend Diane, people who are very, very hard to interview because they know so much and they're so broad, and the conversation just goes its own way. I'm just very, very happy that I could hold my own in the presence of someone so deep, so broad, and so diverse. And without further ado, I give you my conversation with Reverend Diane Johnson. Reverend Diane is in the house. Hello. I mean, how long did it take us to have this conversation?
Oh, months. It's embarrassing.
But I blame you. I blame you. Because I emailed and I followed up.
Yeah. It's when you run a company. That's when you're not available. Between the holidays and running a company and doing workshops and trainings. Yes.
But we
persevered. So we are here.
Beautiful. Anyway, let's back it up a little bit. So you and I met in August at Parliament of World Religions. Mm-hmm. And I've actually spoken about you to my listeners and my followers on social media. So they are expecting this podcast conversation. So why were you at Parliament? If you could just tell us a little bit about why you were there.
Yeah. So I think the convening that is the Parliament of the World's Religions is an extraordinary opportunity to meet leaders and change makers who are really operating at the intersection of faith and spirituality and human rights, right? Yeah. And social transformation. So it's just the workshops, the panel discussions, the communities that we get to engage in are wonderful because it helps us understand that there is a beloved community across the world that is full of such a beautiful variety of spiritual traditions and faith traditions. And at the center of, I would say, I was of so many spiritual and faith traditions is love and taking care of our neighbors and our and so this notion of that it is possible that we create global peace, the ability to and have equality and equity, and how do we create the mechanisms where all of us can thrive?
It was my first time. I know it wasn't yours. Was it your first time?
No, this is like my fourth time.
Oh, wow. So you are a member of Parliament of World Religions.
Yeah. Well, because I presented a number of times when it was in the U.S. So one time it was in the U.S. Another time it was in Canada.
I remember the Canada one.
So it's a very, very powerful gathering. And the one that happened in August of 2023, I think it was like the 125th anniversary of the establishment of the parliament. So that's why they tried to bring so many, it was so large, and why they brought so many people.
From all over. And it was also after COVID, I suppose. So they were almost overcompensating because the whole organization was not impressive, but you know, we'll forgive them. It's an old organization.
Yes, it's true. It was incredible. There were incredible logistical challenges, but you know.
I mean, as a first timer, I can just tell you, I was blown away. I knew it was a massive gathering, but I was not prepared for seeing all spiritual paths and religions and in one room without any wars. And also I was surprised at how socially aware they were. So it wasn't just religion and spirituality and all kumbaya. It was also social activism, environmentalist, women rights, you name it. I was blown away. So it's my calendar item. I'll never miss another one.
But the way that I talk about it is almost like the interfaith Olympics, because it happens 4 years. Cities actually have to bid to host it. Yeah,
No way.
so cities bid to the board of directors and lay out a plan about why the gathering should be held in their city.
In the city.
Yeah.
Wow. No, that's amazing. Okay, now let's talk about you. So I met you in the line to go get food. We met and we instantly hit it off. And what struck me about you was that you're an interfaith minister. And how you said what interfaith was just blew me away.
So I'm an ordained United Church of Christ congregational minister, which is a Protestant tradition that came out of the that was established in the US. Well, the precursors to the faith started in the 1700s, right? But then I'm also a practicing Buddhist. I am also a culturally Jewish. I was my spiritual traditions that I follow also are around Judaism. And then I also am a daughter of Yemaya and Ashun. So I'm also in earth-based African diaspora traditions. And for me, I was lucky. I consider myself lucky enough that I was raised in a family that didn't tell me how I should experience God and how I should experience the divine. So I have a spiritual journey related to my trying to decipher and feel into what is God, what is divine presence, and what my purpose is. And so, I mean, because many people, I mean, there's some in the US, you can become an ordained interfaith minister, which is a little bit of a little here, a little there, a little there.
Yes, that's
But
what I thought you were. Okay.
yeah. But I'm actually grant but for me, I in my lived experience is grounded in multiple, in multiple traditions. And I understand that that is unique. A lot of people don't understand that. But I think in my experience is that the divine and the God shows up in so many different ways, right? And so for me, there is a power of embracing and respecting all of those. And which is why which is why I really am committed to being in be participating in events like, whether it's the Parliament of the World Religions or whether it's about the Interfaith Council when I lived in the Bay Area in California, volunteered and participated in the Interfaith Council, which is again how do we facilitate understanding and connection across across spiritual traditions, because we know so many of the global conflicts are rooted in conflict about what our beliefs around God are.
Yes.
And it's
Well,
and the mixing of politics and faith, which actually
interesting.
should be separate.
Well, you actually led yourself into this because when you said you are also culturally Jewish, I immediately thought the war in Gaza, Israeli, and all that. And I mean, we might as well talk about it. It is happening, it is current, and it's our biggest, in my opinion, threat to world peace right now. What are your thoughts, very briefly, if you have, on
So I think, yeah,
that?
I think the tragedies that are happening in Gaza are the reason that they are so vehement and that they are so profoundly heartbreaking is that it because they are rooted in a cultural narrative of otherness. Right. So and the cultural narrative of survival. So for Israelis, their cultural narrative is that they must protect themselves at all costs. And I think it is I'm going to say like a penultimate contradiction. It is the ultimate contradiction that there is a community of people, a country that was created from a sense of creating homeland
Yes.
for a group of people. And then at the same time, they have spent generations displacing people and having, and let's also be clear that there is a difference between a political arm that is Hamas, that those are not, that they do not speak for all Palestinians, right? And so when, so this is just my humble opinion, but when Israelis rationalize killing innocent children, killing women and children by the thousands to save themselves. I mean, it's like, I'm talking about, an eye for an eye. What is it? What's this, the quote, an eye for an eye, then all you end up is having the world blind.
Land, yes, I
Right?
think it's Andy's quote, yeah.
Yeah. So I, it is, so, and I think it is also, an example of how dangerous and challenging it is when we weave spiritual, well, faith and religion and politics. And I think in that part of the world, they are so
It's so
intricately woven,
intertwined.
it is hard to, come to even get to a point of where their people are able to listen to one another. And we also have instances where there are Palestinians and Israelis who are trying to co-create community and build understanding across the generations, because they realize that is the only way that there will eventually be peace. And I
Peace, yeah.
pray, and I think there are so many of us that are praying around the world
Yeah.
that this conflict is resolved. And it is not an accident that we are living in a time where there is such an extraordinary increase of dictatorships and those individuals who want to be autocrats and who want to dismantle democracy. So,
Yeah.
here in the US, we are having such profound cultural wars. We have people who say that they are Christian, and they are perpetuating the false narrative that the US was established as a Christian nation. And
Yeah.
that's just blatantly not true. I mean, our founding document that talks about that there was a separation between church and state.
Yeah.
And and so there's an important question to ask. Why is it in this time that we have so many global leaders who are insisting that they can create nation states that are fundamentally based on oppressing individuals, taking away human rights, civil rights? It's like, why is that happening?
In fact, that's a good question. Why is that happening in 2024? Because you would think that with technology, with human evolution, with how we are growing as a species, and I don't know if we'll have time to talk about AI a little bit, because that's also an area of interest. Why do you think we are going backwards? Why are we having crazy wars? Because even in Africa, there's a war in the DRC, in the Congo. That is just also threatening the continent in a way. It's almost like, on the one hand, we have ChatGPT in AI, and then we are also back in the 1940s. What is that about? Which I think links nicely to the topic of finding balance in an unbalanced world, in a way, I think.
So, my understanding about the reason that we have despots and dictators and profound arch conservatism and fundamentalism is that it is the result of, in the most simplest terms, it is the result of prioritizing capitalism. Right, and prioritizing inequity and inequality. And if you are oriented toward amassing resources for a small group of people that requires you to then separate individuals from their resources and their ability to thrive. You are required to take away people's rights, because that is the only way.
The only way it will
Yeah. So because if we think, because I think if we think about the conflicts around the globe, at the heart, it is about resources, right? It is about that one particular group of people believe that they should have, that there should be, it is allowable to have a profound disequilibrium around resources, that you have a very, very, very small percentage of people who acquire the majority of the resources, and therefore allowing, 70, 80, 90% of the people to not have, right? And so have you had the opportunity to read Isabel Wilkerson's book Caste? There's been a film made by the amazing African American female director Ava
Yes, I
DuVernay.
know Eva. Yeah.
Yeah, so who did Selma, who did 13, who did and Queen Sugar, amazing television series. So she wrote and produced this beautiful, beautiful film called Caste, which is the interpretation about what Isabel Wilkerson must have gone through to write the book Caste. And one of the profound things about that book is that it explains the global phenomenon around othering, that there is a belief system, a false belief system, that some people, again, should have more privilege than others, right? And so it's a and I recommend it to anyone and everyone, because it connects what happened in the US to what happened in Germany during the Holocaust, to the life of the Dalits, the untouchables in India. And so it helps people understand the framing. Like, how is it that these belief systems occurred in order to oppress and disenfranchise people? Like, this notion that one group of people is undeserving. In the US, it is people of African descent versus whites, as many.
I think everywhere that's what it is.
Yes, for white
In South Africa,
supremacy.
it's definitely the case. And in South Africa, it's even more peculiar because white people are a minority. Like they
Yeah.
are a small group of people.
Right.
Black people are a majority. This is our country. This is our continent.
Yes.
And yet,
Yes.
they own capital, and by extension, they own the politicians.
Yes. And I've been so honored and blessed enough to, I've been to South, although it's been, the last time I went was, I think, in 2010. Yeah, so it's been almost 15 years, right? So I was there when whites were voting about whether or not there would be national elections for a Democratic president. So I think that was not, I think that was 92. I think it was 90.
Slightly
Yes, that was
earlier,
the first time. Yes, I went in 92, and then I went in 2002, and then I think in 2004. And what's stunning to me about South Africa is that because of what the country and what people have lived through and experienced, that there that there is a level of analysis that you that South Africans have about systemic and structural racism, because they realize that they have been manipulated by this notion of race, and that that between like the difference between that there's a difference between blacks and colors. I mean,
And Indians, so there's
right,
a
and
shade.
right, and so, and all of that is made up. all that is made up by the system
Yeah.
to take away people's rights. But what it did is it created a mindset that certain people are only a mindset that certain people should be treated certain ways,
Yes. And we're
right?
still living through that, hey? We are.
Yes.
So I understand what you mean when you're saying South Africa could teach the world a thing or two about those systemic oppression and class and all that. Very interesting.
Yeah.
Did you love the
And I
episode?
would
If you'd like to
say,
listen to more, you know what to do.
yeah, I
You'd
think that
simply have to
I got the
subscribe. The
title for
subscription link is on
I would
all
have to
of my
talk about
social
that.
media bio. It is also on the
And I
show notes
think
right here on this episode and all the
if
other
there's someone who
episodes'
finds
show
that
notes.
useful,
You simply click on the link and you follow the process, and we will see you on the other side. For now, I wish you love and all green lights, as always.